Now, earlier today, a military convoy was sighted and seen heading toward the capital of Zimbabwe less than a day after the military said, or the head of the military rather, said he would step in to end President Robert Mugabe's purge of opponents. Mugabe plunged the country into a crisis last week by sacking Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, widely seen as a power move to make way for his wife Grace to succeed him. Yesterday, the head of the armed forces openly threatened to intervene in politics if Mugabe did not stop removing veterans from the government. Joining me now on the line to give us the latest in terms of what they have heard at the Department of International Relations is the head of public policy, Clayson Munyala. Clayson, good evening. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Karima, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. Now, Clayson, when I spoke with you earlier, you were saying that Minister Maite Nkwane Mashabane was getting a full update from her counterpart. From where you are sitting in Durko, what is the latest coming out of Zimbabwe?
Yeah, it's a bit of a difficult one because we would expect the government of Zimbabwe to lead in terms of communicating the latest developments. But here's what we as South Africa are doing currently, because as you know, any situation in any neighboring country directly affects us, and therefore we can't fold our arms. So we are monitoring the situation very closely, and we are getting regular updates from our ambassador and the team in Harare. And the members of cabinet of Zimbabwe are also briefing us quite regularly. In fact, there are two ministers who are currently in the country. I am not at liberty to say which portfolios they hold, but they are here to also furnish us with some of the dynamics at play and give us a fuller, detailed briefing, so that we can collectively look at us, you know, at what we need to do, because the stability of the region is paramount. This is not just about a single country in SADC, you know, experiencing difficulties, but the stability of the SADC region has to be of primary importance, and that's our preoccupation at the moment.
Now, of course, that stability could well be at risk considering what is coming out of social media. But from a factual point of view, Clayson, what is it that you know for sure? We have tracked some reports. Many people are saying all the classic signs of a coup not in place. You don't have a situation where, let's say, key national institutions in Zimbabwe are being taken over. You haven't heard shots being fired. There are reports that President Mugabe's house is surrounded. And of course, there's also reports that the broadcaster is sealed off. But those are unconfirmed reports. Have you been able to verify any troop movements in the capital in Harare?
Look, the like I said, I mean, it's a bit of a difficult one because we wouldn't want to lead in terms of communicating the latest on matters affecting a neighboring sovereign country. But from the information that we have, nothing has changed in Zimbabwe. There was a cabinet meeting this afternoon. In fact, I think it finished about 2 hours ago. And our understanding is that the head of state is back at his official residence, going about, you know, normal business as he would usually do. There was a bit of activity, you know, which I think people are reporting or, you know, observed today. But there wasn't anything that, you know, would suggest that an unconstitutional change of power has taken place. Nothing of that sort, which is why, you know, we will continue to monitor. But as matters stand now officially, there hasn't been anything that has changed anything in Zimbabwe.
Just in terms of South Africans, obviously there's a lot of movement between ourselves and Zimbabwe, particularly to the north of our own borders. A lot of the towns in Limpopo and so on, people, Zimbabweans coming to do business and vice versa. Are you issuing any warnings for people to be careful? Are you monitoring the border areas? Are you issuing any notifications to South Africans who are in Zimbabwe, people who are either visiting relatives or who are doing business there?
Look, what we said this afternoon is that South Africans who are living in Zimbabwe or working there or who are on holiday or for whatever reason need to maintain regular contact with our embassy in Harare in case they need updates with regards to the latest developments without necessarily pressing any panic buttons, because we are not aware of any changes that have taken place. As far as the border is concerned, particularly Beitbridge Border Post, you would know that it's one of the busiest border posts. In fact, if not the busiest. So we've got a strong presence from the security agencies in this country stationed at that border, even without anything happening in the neighboring country. So we believe that the personnel that's there is adequate to deal with anything that may happen. But so far, our message to South Africans is really just to be, especially those who are planning to travel to Zimbabwe, we're not discouraging anybody from traveling. What we will say, however, is you need to maintain regular contact with our embassy in Harare, just so that you get regular updates with regards to the developments there.
Now, obviously, the standard response and political framework for the African Union is that it, of course, doesn't recognize any governments that come about as a consequence of a coup and undemocratic means. Zimbabwe is, however, experiencing quite a bit of turmoil as a result of the infighting within ZANU-PF. We heard the ANC saying this afternoon earlier that the ZANU-PF needs to sort this out, that Zimbabwe is not a colony of South Africa, and that the ANC leaves the matter in the hands of Zimbabweans and the governing party and other forces there. From your point of view, in terms of the possibility that the army could be flexing its muscle or even try and engineer political change, what is the message from the South African government to the Zimbabwean government and to the Zimbabwean armed forces for that matter?
Yeah, our principled position on such matters is that we believe dialogue is always the way to go. We believe that political problems have to be resolved through dialogue. Resorting to military action or that sort of thing is not sustainable. Anything that comes out of an action like that has the potential to spiral out of control and bring about instability that will necessarily, bring unintended consequences and problems that you may not necessarily resolve speedily. So what we always urge whenever there is a political challenge in any country, not just there in SADC, is that dialogue is the way to go. And we would call for the same, would call for restraint, would call for all stakeholders in Zimbabwe to sit around the table and resolve the challenges that they are facing through dialogue. And we, as neighboring countries, would stand ready to support that process.
All right, that is where we leave it with Clayson Monyela. Clayson, of course, the head of public diplomacy at the Department of International Relations, giving us an update from the South African government's perspective. We are going to now be joined by veteran Zimbabwean journalist Peter Thornycroft for her understanding of what is going on in the country. Peter, you have obviously been doing this for your whole life. What is it that you're hearing? We're hearing a lot of different things on social media. There are pictures coming out, there are troop movements that are coming out. There are talks that President Mugabe's house is surrounded. We're not sure whether he's being contained or whether it is a show of force in support of him. What is it that you know for sure at this stage?
First of all, I mostly have reported on South Africa, but I have done a lot of reporting on Zimbabwe. Mugabe's house is always surrounded. It's guarded by the presidential guard, and it's guarded by police. And my information is much like Clayson Monyela's, that all is normal in Harare, and there's no untoward activity. The city centre is deserted tonight, as the city centre is always deserted. Restaurants are open, kids are going to school, etc., etc. So I think that any reports of even an attempted coup d'etat are grossly exaggerated. General Chiwenga, who's head of the armed forces, his contract expired actually in July. So he's also knows that he remains in his job with his salary at Mugabe's whim, and I suspect that that job will probably come to an end quite soon. What excited people today was there were four personnel carriers, armed personnel carriers, which went into Harare from north of Harare.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought that they were going to go through the city center, but in fact, they went to the presidential guard, and I'm not sure why they went there. This was reported in some places as Zimbabwe's tanks, so it doesn't have any tanks. And one of those armed carriers had very few soldiers in it. I am not sure why General Chiwenga would be doing this, excepting there are definitely members of the government and the ruling ZANU-PF party loyal to Emmerson Mnangagwa who are outraged that he got fired.
Mm-hmm.
He gave more than 40 years of his life to Robert Mugabe. He has been Robert Mugabe's hatchet man from independence onwards. Many of the atrocities committed in southern Zimbabwe and post-2000 when the MDC emerged, we are told, were Emmerson Mnangagwa's work under Mugabe's orders.
Mm. Now,
yes.
Now, I want to bring in South African journalist Crystal Audison. Crystal, of course, for many listeners who listen to The Breakfast Show, does the Africa Report. Crystal, good evening. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, Karima.
Now, you've been listening to both Clayson and to Peter. Now, what is the information that you are getting? I was quite intrigued this morning when I heard you on The Breakfast Show talking about the extraordinary press conference, of course, that the, you know, the chief, the army chief Chiwenga, put together. And this is most unusual, even though this is someone who serves at the pleasure and probably the mercy of Robert Mugabe. This is a little unprecedented, Crystal.
It is unprecedented, Karima, and I was with a few Zimbabweans that are sort of ex-ZANU-PF insiders, and they still maintain, well, at least they're part of the old guard, Karima, they still maintain that all is not well within the party. The sacking of the VP last week absolutely split the party in half, and that there are those that are really angry at that and want to see change. The question is, what will that change be?
Mm.
Will we see Grace Mugabe destroying the old guard, getting her G40 in power, or will the VP, who they say is in Pretoria, will he be able to gather his troops, including his close comrades within the armed forces, to get that support and fight back? And that is the big question, Karima. Of course, we know all eyes have been in, at least in South Africa, we're focusing on the ANC's elective conference. But ZANU-PF is having their annual conference at exactly the same time, starting a few days earlier, the 12th to the 17th. So, you know, so analysts, Zimbabwean analysts at least, are pointing out, you know, it's so close.
Yes.
Does it mean that all eyes will be on South Africa and not enough tension, attention to what's going to happen in Zimbabwe? And then another issue, Karima, a few months ago, and it wasn't reported extensively, but Thabo Mbeki was seen in Zimbabwe, and at least three sources of mine confirmed it. And he was called in to mediate between senior ZANU-PF officials and the army, because there were talk of that all was not well within the army. And I don't think people actually saw him at the airport and were present at that meeting, who told sources of mine. And so those have been things that have been happening in the background, Karima. And I do not think it's a coincidence one day after the senior officer within the Defence Force, who is also then the joint operation commander in charge of the intelligence, police, etc., has an unprecedented press conference accompanied by 90 of his senior officials. And then a day later, we see troop movement. movement. I don't think it's coincidental.
Peter, you are obviously completely familiar with the various factions in ZANU-PF, in the ruling elite, how these things play out, the various tensions. The army chief's move, do you see it as a departure and as hugely significant in the way that Crystal sees it? And more importantly, what are we to make of it? Irrespective of what we see today, how do we interpret the army chief speaking out? Is this just the VP's kind of reserve forces in ZANU-PF coming to the fore? Are we just bracing ourselves for a complete showdown, in December when the ZANU conference actually takes place?
Well, actually, it's a special congress in December ahead of elections next year. And I suspect that Mnangagwa expected he might be in trouble at the congress. He didn't expect it quite as soon as he came. Listen, it was most unusual for General Chiwenga. The first time I recall him having this kind of press conference. He and his colleagues in the security services have previously stated to the state press, because foreign press and press from the privately owned media are never invited to these events. He has previously said that if MDC leader Morgan Tsvangirai won elections, he, although he's a civil servant, he would not take the salute for him. He would not serve him. So he is avowedly ZANU-PF as a one-party state. That's how he sees it. This has got nothing to do with democratic reform, etc. As you know, the ZANU-PF government will not speak to people like myself, journalists, however long we've been at it. It's extremely hard to get them to comment on anything. So this is most unusual what has happened. I think we should also consider, just say there was a coup d'etat in Zimbabwe. Just say Chiwenga was able to do it. Well, South Africa could turn off a third of their electricity. They're a landlocked country. They would run out of fuel. They've got no cash in the banks, literally no cash in the banks. It would be a very short-lived event. Unfortunately, people are pretty desperate, not least because there is no cash. You swipe your cards, they're phantom currencies, the black market is back on the streets and 4th Street, and the cost of essentials in your local supermarket have gone up between 15% and 30% since the middle of September. Now, so there is, economically, things are extremely difficult, even though Zimbabwe's exports have risen quite dramatically in 2017.
Crystal, you've been reporting on that economic meltdown. You reported that people are now able to take livestock as, some kind of collateral to banks and so forth. We saw the sections of ZANU youth coming out in support of Grace, the G40. Is this a showdown between the Grace Mugabe faction, largely supported by young people, and the VP's kind of old guard, which find themselves, many of whom are veterans of the army and of the former liberation movement?
Karima, I think before I answer that, I just want to touch on the general and his profile. You know, 2008 was obviously a very pivotal year for that country because it had election. It was so close that Morgan Tsvangirai was going to take the presidency, and that obviously never happened. Now, there were always questions about the role of the army. And, of course, Chiwenga played a very important role in that, always ensuring as a comrade, a war veteran, and has been around since the 70s, a close comrade, knows all the secrets of Mugabe, of course, also very involved in the Maranga diamond, kind of issued in Zimbabwe. And I don't think one must underestimate these close ties, these comrades, these war veterans that have come a long way, that have defended each other, defended the revolution, defended the struggle against imperialists, and because that's the language they use, Karima. It's not to be underestimated. And, clearly there's been a trust that's been broken with the VP being fired. I note the run-up to, you know, what Mugabe eventually did at different political rallies. You know, Grace always was quite adamant and attacked the generals and the VP of always plotting something. In fact, she spoke about in October about plotting a coup. So I don't think one must underestimate the role of the old guard. They clearly know what ticks Mugabe. They know as a 93-year-old, you know, where he's at in his head. But they also think, I think perhaps they underestimated the power of Grace and the people that surrounding her, including Professor Jonathan Moyo, who we know was the spin doctor since 2000 from a lecturer I remember interviewing when he was still at the University of Zimbabwe. And I do think that the younger generation, including that, you know, the youth league came out very strongly today, in fact, saying that, you know, the army chief is appointed and is not elected. Also, you know, using strong language, knowing that they have the full support of Grace and that G40. And at the moment, seemingly, if one just look at it in terms of social media and the different reports, they seem to be in control. But I don't think so, Karima. You know, the fact that Mugabe has been in power for so long was only possible through the help of the army and that old guard. And I don't think one can just simply underestimate their role and potentially the power that they have in what we're going to see in the next few weeks unfolding in Zimbabwe.
All right. We've also got Professor Tony Hawkins. He's a professor of economics. He's based in Zimbabwe. Tony, good evening. Welcome to the show.
Good evening.
Now, I'm sure you've been listening to what Peter and Crystal have been saying, just unpacking some of the key characters in this political intrigue that is playing itself out in Zimbabwe. Is what is going on, you know, the indications that the inner circle in Zimbabwe and rather the inner circle in ZANU-PF has ruptured, and that what you see here is now, you know, a more family, more dynasty kind of an arrangement with Grace coming out, insisting that Mugabe appoints his heir rather than that kind of trusted circle of comrades that Crystal was referring to, Tony?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, I think it's very much a party conflict that is going on, and which was makes it all the more questionable why the head of the army should have wanted to get involved in this. It's not as if it was a national issue, and in his statement he went to some lengths to try and claim that he was in getting himself involved because it was a national issue. You know, it's up to the party to decide, obviously, who they want as their leader, and it's not up for the military to get involved. I suspect that the military feel that they are being elbowed out, to use your term, the old guard, they're being elbowed out and replaced by people who weren't involved in the liberation war.
Peter, the country's in an economic meltdown. What is the fight about? Is it just for political control, or is it also to continue to hold on to whatever levers in the economy that is still working?
Very much the latter, I think. I mean, I think it's one thing you've learned over the years about politics in Zimbabwe is very little has got to do with political ideology or philosophy, and everything to do with getting your hands on the resources. And I think that's what the struggle is about now. The military and the old guard have had their hands on the diamonds, on various other things, patronage, etc. And they're resisting the attempts or the efforts of others to change this and shift the balance of power. I don't myself, but then, you know, I'm not a political animal, but I don't myself see Mrs. Mugabe as a real player other than through the influence to her husband. You know, when it comes to a future president, I don't think she's on the radar screen. I think it's not going to be her, whoever it's going to be. I suspect it won't be her.
Peter, do you agree that Grace isn't a real player? Is she a proxy for other forces? And if so, who would that be?
I think Grace Mugabe has amassed a fortune larger than we've ever seen amassed by any human being in Zimbabwe, most of which she has stolen. And she's been accommodated in this by her husband, President Robert Mugabe, who has limitless access to the Treasury. And I think Grace Mugabe would like to be vice president purely to protect herself when the old man finally pops his clogs or retires, which is most unlikely that he would retire. He would stand for re-election, his last elections next year when he's 94, and his term ends when he's 99. And he is, however frail we may think he looks for a 93-year-old as he is at the moment, he's in reasonably good health and seems to have control of his brain. I think Grace Mugabe is widely loathed in Zimbabwe, and that what she is doing is not to become president. What she is doing is to protect herself. And she and Emmerson Mnangagwa worked quite hard in 2014 to evict the former vice president, Joyce Majuru, out of her post because she was quite popular. They got together over that, and then somehow Grace Mugabe feared Mnangagwa wanted to move in on the presidency, and so she turned on him. And as I say, he gave more than 40 years of his life to Mugabe. He was his bodyguard in Mozambique. He was his personal assistant, and he's done lots of dirty work for Mugabe, both after independence and after the MDC emerged in 2000, in particular in 2008 when the MDC and Morgan Tsvangirai won the elections. And as we moved towards the runoff, I saw some of the most ghastly political violence that I'd seen. It wasn't so many of them, but it was particularly horrible. And that is, we largely believe that that came from elements within the military.
Crystal, the fallout between the VP and Grace Mugabe, what caused it? Is it just that Grace began to see the VP as a potential successor that would replace her? Like Peter said, certainly the VP was integral to keeping President Mugabe in power for a very, very long time. What caused the rift?
I think certainly there's no permanent political friends in Zimbabwe, and we clearly saw how Joyce Majuru was dealt with by both of these key people. But I do think that Grace realized that the VP clearly, one as the VP of ZANU-PF and the country, had a base as a war veteran, as the former intelligence chief. Those are histories and experience and comrades that you don't just erase. She is a newcomer on the political scene. Yes, she has money, and she's been able to start her own informal group, and now it's a formal group with the G40. And so ultimately, Grace, as colleagues in Zimbabwe have pointed out, you know, she's more interested in protecting her money and her son's future. And so whether she's really interested in that presidency, Karima, I really think it's still questionable, because she's really shown that it's all about the material wealth, and she's really not well liked in Zimbabwe, well, at least amongst the rank and file, and having that, you know, no political kind of the history that the VP and other war veterans have. So I do think she realized that the VP was moving in, and she needed to fight back. And I think it started with the cabinet reshuffle, when key members were like the finance ministry, and of course Emmerson was also kicked out. That was, you know, the first game plan, and then it just continued. So I do think that's a big point. I think what's interesting, Karima, and what's obviously been a bit disappointing, is that given that the country is heading towards election next year, we've not seen the opposition, you know, coming together in a united force. We have Joyce Majuru, we have Welsh Mnube, we have Tendai Biti, and then of course we have Morgan Tsvangirai, who is not well. And it's unfortunate. I think that for me is quite unfortunate, how we've not seen the opposition coming together in a united voice, like we've seen in Kenya, for example, because this is really a moment in time where you can start, you know, bringing hope hope to Zimbabweans that change is possible. But all eyes, and we are focused on ZANU-PF, and it just clearly shows that ZANU-PF is still the party in control. And, you know, no surprises, it will win next year's election.
Look, it's a colossus. I mean, it is dominant in the Zimbabwean political milieu. It is what we are discussing is effectively a party that is at war with itself, but very much still in charge of the country, the opposition, not even featuring in terms of, you know, whether the army's intervention is a good or a bad thing. What I wanted to talk about specifically, Peter, is where to from here for ZANU-PF. I mean, this is an old liberation movement. It has kept Mugabe in power, but it cannot stay in the past. It cannot hang on to the old ways of doing things. What we're seeing now, is that an attempt inside ZANU-PF to modernize, or is it just an egregious, you know, attempt to hold on to whatever's left of the fiscus and whatever's left that generates profit in the country?
I think it's a question of the endurance that ZANU-PF will keep going until the old man goes, and they're going to show him that loyalty until he leaves office or until he dies in office. He will most likely die in office. Perhaps Mnangagwa would have hoped he might have moved away earlier. Actually, he's never said that, and we don't know that he really, you know, believed that. ZANU-PF, it's very lonely outside ZANU-PF. It's almost impossible to survive. It is an enormous party there. 67% of the population live in the rural areas, and the opposition has hardly made any inroads into those rural areas. So it's a very feudal situation. Your life begins and ends with your birth certificates, your death certificates, your piece of land that is given to you. Your difficulties are all centered in within ZANU-PF. So, yes, there has been a split in ZANU-PF. There are two factions, the G40 and the Lacoste, which is Mnangagwa's faction. Mnangagwa, let us remember, he lost two elections to the MDC. He's never been particularly popular within his own area. So he needs the support of the army. But I do think that ZANU-PF is, in fact, weakened by this split, and it was weakened by when Joyce Mujuru was evicted. And one looks at the opposition forces, and just as one was saying, why haven't they managed to get themselves together in a loose coalition and go for the main chance, which is a coalition against ZANU-PF? I don't see that actually happening. The MDC has got no money. It's owed money by Parliament. Its leader, Morgan Tsvangirai, is not well, and they too have not yet sorted out the succession, nor have they fully engaged with all the minuscule little political parties, because one of the only ways of making money in Zimbabwe is through politics, being an MP or whatever, as we know. But I do think that ZANU-PF is weakened. We are unsure of how Mugabe is going to react to this. I personally don't believe there'll be a coup d'etat. I don't think there's the signs of it there. I don't think the army is all behind Chiwenga. I think the army itself is also divided. The police, we know, the leader of the police is very much a Grace Mugabe and G40 supporter. So it's not all the security services, you know, that we're talking about. I wonder how Mugabe is going to react in the next day or two. I suspect Chiwenga's ended contract will be respected, and he'll go. Will he then be arrested and charged with criminal activity? I think that's where we're sitting at the moment. We don't quite know how Mugabe is going to act, because Mugabe does not actually like to sack people. That was what was so strange when he moved against Mnangagwa, and he moved against him, we think, because of Grace Mugabe. He wouldn't have done it without her.
Mm-hmm. Tony, let me bring you in here. Of course, all of this is about the money, and all of this is about the economy. The Zimbabwean economy has you know, fallen apart many times over. I was at a conference a while ago, and a renowned Zimbabwean a scholar was talking about the fact that, you know, whenever people spoke to him about what is going on in Zimbabwe, they always asked, where's the working class in Zimbabwe? Where's organized trade unions in Zimbabwe? And he said what people didn't realize is that Zimbabwe was in fact deindustrialized, and that that was one of the reasons why trade unions were so weak in Zimbabwe, and an urban working class couldn't really, really be mobilized because the economy had just stagnated, and you know, you had a very small industrial base. Where is the urban working class? Where is organized labor in all of this? And is that the missing link in terms of the spark that is required on the opposition front to present some kind of coherent alternative to ZANU-PF, Tony?
Well, it's a long answer, but what Peter was saying a few minutes ago about 67% of the population living in the rural areas, deindustrialization certainly has occurred in Zimbabwe, but so it has in South Africa. Let's not forget that.
Yes.
In fact, you know, in not long ago, the former Minister of Finance from the Mnangagwa camp, a chap called Chinamasa, actually boasted that because the economy had informalized, the trade union movement was now pretty much toothless.
Yes.
And I think that's a fact. The fact is that outside agriculture, we're employing roughly the same number of people as we did 30 years ago. There's been absolutely no growth at all. So what we have is a highly informal economy, very difficult to organize, and therefore there's no center of, if you like, socialist type power there. And one of the you know, I think it was your own question, it seemed to me to put the finger on it earlier. When you read the general statement, you realize he talks a bit like somebody in East Germany in the 1980s, towards the end of
yes.
communist Soviet rule there. He talks about revolutionary parties and democracy and these sorts of things, which are clearly nonsensical in terms of what is actually what's actually happening, what he is threatening. So economically, there is no sort of opposition or no power base. In fact, the a great deal of the though opinion formers in business were in fact, if anything, sympathetic to Mnangagwa, because Mnangagwa made all these promises, you know, the farmers will get their land back and these sorts of things, and they believed them, and they are quite shell-shocked by what has happened in the last week.
All right, guys, that is where we will leave it. I'm going to end off by reading from a press statement that we have gotten from the ultimate spin doctor, Mr. Moyo. It's a press statement from ZANU-PF. I'm not sure whether you guys have received it, but essentially it says, consistent with the guiding principle of national liberation, the ruling Zimbabwe African National Union Patriotic Front, ZANU-PF, reaffirms the primacy of politics over the gun. It is against an understanding of this abiding principle that the statement issued by General Chiwenga, purporting to speak on behalf of the Zimbabwe Defense Forces, was not only surprising, but an outrageous vitiation of professional soldiership and his wartime record as a high-ranking freedom fighter entrusted with command responsibility in a free and democratic Zimbabwe. That is, of course, a vintage Moyo. It says, clearly calculated to disturb national peace and stability, the said statement by General Constantino Chiwenga was which was not signed and which did not represent the rest of the command element, suggests treasonable conduct on his part, as this was meant to incite insurrection and violent challenge to the constitutional order. Indeed, this is what happens when the gun seeks to overreach by dictating to politics and norms of constitutionality. Crystal, do you think this is a precursor? Is the general going to be sacked and potentially face treason charges?
I definitely think, you know, Professor Moyo is a wordsmith and a spin doctor of note. And his faction, of course, they are in control right now of the party, with Grace leading their faction. So I do think that all won't be well for the general, Karima, and we will be reporting on it over the next few days.
All right, guys. Thank you so very much. That's, of course, Crystal Orderson, who brings us the Africa Report every morning on The Breakfast Show. Veteran Zimbabwean journalist Peter Thornycroft, big thank you. Thank you for coming through. And, of course, a professor of economics based in Zimbabwe, Professor Tony Hawkins, all sharing their insights on the developing story there in Zimbabwe.